say the sun much.
Somebody has.
He traveled around the world on his own. We all had his arms and other travel. How did he travel? Many times by coach plane, by himself or with one other individual. Never had a stenographer on any of those trips. Never had a stenographer. We sometimes have only one other individual. And he visited with Southeast Asian Bureau of Americans. Of course, that's 67, some of that. But the travel began in 63, 63, 64, 65, all through the years. Rather than where. But I digress to that. To get back, this dramatic began in 64. Republican Party launched. Who was he like? Most unlikely man. But he had, but this man had one thing going for him that no other national Republican had. Very old water, very old water. He had been one who acted better convention and so forth. Went to that over the country on his own, traveling in commercial airplanes, with oil engines, campaigning all out for the day, for full water, and for congressmen, for senators, and what he knew was a losing cause. Full water, he had many other faults, but he's always great. So full water had his partisans. Here is a man who stood by him, although he was generally recognized that he was a man who did not share all of the water's views, but he stood with his partner. Then, Nixon continues. Other Republicans, of course, not Republican for Shatter, 64. Johnson, after his landslide victory, began to slip some. Then came 66. Here again, this is living in the Army. He got a source, and we can say, and traveled again to the country, and the blank states. From throughout, predicted he'd carry 40% prediction, and the party Congress became 40 congressmen, and blank senators, and blank governors. And he got it right on the road and so forth. And yet, after that, it was interesting to know, I think it was Eric Severin, and you can always pick your leads with the press center. For example, if I were to start such a book, I would almost put in, at the beginning of each chapter, a pressman, a very respected, a little ticket asshole, but I mean like you could take a Martin Bronsky or a Scotty Ressman or something, Richard Nixon is forever finished. Never any of our friends, always our enemies, you see what I mean? He is finished. Or you can say after Cambodia or after May, or so forth and so on and so on and so on, or if you can't possibly win. You know what I mean? There are many times you've got to knock, but I just give it in, check it. It's an excellent way to catch attention to the beginning. Like you use the quote at the beginning of your article.
Right.
You might use that as the beginning of chapter heads. And then here's what happened. Because the whole story, basically, is triumphing over adversity. Now, let me go on. Then in 66, he traveled. And yet afterwards, the Gary Severide or one of the pontificators went on television. The big loser in this election was Nixon. Ironically, while he could campaign for everybody, while he predicted it correctly, new stars risen on the scene. Rockefeller, Reagan, Romney.
Remember both of these magazines had the six guys, same six on the cover, and we weren't on the cover.
All right.
Great day after the election.
Right. You put the magazine in. But there was one television quote. That night I remember hearing this guy said, the big loser is Richard Nixon. Then came 66, the Romney star was somehow, some way, always in polls. He was there. He was always doing reasonably well and so forth. Again, he tended to his thing. He didn't make any sense. He traveled around the world again in 67. And then came the campaign in 68. The majority of the congressmen, a majority of the senators, a majority of the governors, a majority of the state legislators, and a very substantial majority of the registered voters.
Right.
You've got to start with the fact that we started with a minority of all of those, and 25% get the exact vote, according to Gallup, or 26%, or 24, whatever it is. Only 24% said they were Republicans. This was true in 68. It was also true in 1972. See, the point that is often missed with regard to this election, that they say, well, Eisenhower did this and that and the other. Taking Eisenhower, it's a goddamn, the country was very evenly balanced in the Congress and the Senate, among governors and so forth. The country was better off even before Goldwater, when it was very evenly balanced. But after 64, it was demolished. 66, it came back some. But still, that even then, it was not. But in 1972, if we had done what we'd done in 70, down even further in 72, we started with a minority of congressmen, a minority of senators, a minority of governors, and, let me say also, a minority of the Republicans, in other words, a minority party. Then I go on with this, and ironically too, and not, don't say this is bitterness or anything, and certainly I feel it, because I don't, that now a candidate in history, in 1972, for example, when you get to 72, had more editorial endorsements and less support among the Washington representatives of the press and the representatives of the national television union, the next, you know what I mean?
I know, right.
The opposition of basically the liberal establishment media, the media that comments. This has to do with the it has nothing to do, whereas it was exactly the other way around with Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And with Eisenhower, at least it was about an even split. You know what I mean?
Right.
They weren't ever that much, but in our case, in 68 it was that way. They were hungry. In 72, they were with McGovern. You know? Oh, sure, they were pissed off, and they wrote bad things. We don't mean it about McGovern. We all know that. But deep down, you go down through the national television media and so forth. And the Akron syndrome, I don't think you can say was repeated as bad in 72 or 68, was it? I don't know, was it or was it?
No, it wasn't quite, no. I think it's a hard show. 68 was a hard show.
68 was a hard show.
Yeah.
But 72, but 68 didn't go. 72, we had done better.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, you understand? I want you to get across the fact that the Nixon, first the personal, frankly, guts that it took and determination and stamina to continue the fight. In other words, there's too many of the people write, well, it's just a question of luck. That's the sort of the simple approach. Well, it's got to be something more than that. It is from 62, from 1961, the time I left the vice presidency, until 1968, November 5th, when we were elected, I didn't have a goddamn sou from any public source. You know what I mean?
Right.
I earned it.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Right.
There was no party to support. You know, sure, the party center paid for expenses when we traveled around the world in 1966. You remember, they finally got a plane.
Yeah, that was it.
Here. But you remember, this was a case where I was supporting it out of earnings and so forth and so on.
Right.
It's somewhat similar to the way, in fact, Churchill, remember, wrote books. Of course, he had a little money, but he wrote books. When I was out of office, in 32, in lecturing in the United States, sort of developed whatever. They didn't use it really quickly. The point is, I really had to earn the money. I took it. Hell, anybody that was out 8 years making $250,000 a year or so, as I did, should have had a hell of a lot bigger net worth than $500,000 when I ran for office in 1969. Why didn't I? After 8 years. Why not? Well, I spent one hell of a lot of it. You know, just
right.
Doing that. Well, the point that I make is, get across the fact that we did it with a minority party, with a minority of the Congress, with back, and perhaps in 68, above all, an don't be very careful about choosing the real press. There's a brand of press, a hell of a lot better than the talk of the press. Always needed, is it? And always find out that there are notable exceptions. Always find out that there's no, that one of the most remarkable things is that that opposition continued, except for the little blips of the China trip and the Russia trip, with unrelenting animosity, use the word, throughout the 4 years. Nothing new did this right. Nothing new did this right. Over and over again, they said, we said, have to win this war, and so on and so on. This kills them. Somebody else is going to come along. And first it was Musky was going to be it, and then it was Humphrey, and then it was MacArthur. And yet, somehow, we don't want it. Now, could point out that, and then how the use of, the effective use, how do we combat this? In office, we combat it not only through spectacular plays, but through, in retrospect, rather spectacular use of the power. November 3rd, the Cambodia. And of course, the trips abroad.
Right. And the office. That's that November 3rd thing. Remember when we talked about Camp David? The idea is to, instead of compromise and conciliation when they're building up all that heat, you drag in the Broder column about the breaking of the president. Remember that time back then?
Yeah, break. He wrote a break.
Right. And then we just quote directly from that, and then, you know, the Nixon in trouble stuff, and the news magazines, and the demonstrations here.
Yeah.
And then the speech, it's rather than being a speech of conciliation and compromise.
Just started right.
Confrontation.
Right.
And then we got the polls of Gallup that showed you go then, I think, to 68%
tries.
Right. The new American majority. And that's the whole second chapter.
And then, of course, the other thing is the May 8th is the same thing.
Right.
The May 8th, but the most amusing thing is that both Cambodia and May 8th years. Cambodia, we had the problem. And say, we didn't fall as a result of Cambodia. We stuck right in there.
Right.
You know, but the most amusing thing about is the ironic thing is that the press are their dire predictions. That Acumen 8, for example, World War III, the sun will be canceled, and all the rest. So it's going to turn out that way. I mean, every time you can, you ought to find out that it hasn't been an easy 4 years. Because basically, it's been one. And you ought to find out that it is the job of the press, that I feel is the job of the press to criticize the press. I followed it for years. I asked for no quarter and I gave no quarter. I have great respect for the members of the press, the media press. All I asked was for a single standard. Mm-hmm. But we should have a single standard, and that's all I was just upon. And you can point out in these 4 years, I'm going to get across the point, that no pressman has ever been hailed in here and raised up. No one has ever been called to the phone. No editor's ever been called. No publisher's ever been called. No television person's ever been called. Except for commending them.
Uh-huh.
That's actually totally true. Now, it's been done by a few others. The supporters, but it should be. That's their job. But they point out this is a direct difference, you see, comparison with good old LBJ. understand it, and I'm not resentful of it, and I'm not affected by it, I'm not emotionally disturbed by it. The criticism rolls off my back. I read it because I think it's my responsibility to know what people are reading. And also, they may have something worse than me at times, and they do. But on the other hand, I think the most important thing is to do the job. And once the individual, the other thing is this, let me put it another way. I think when we talk about the news summary, you know, I try to keep out of it sometimes, and very little read it, but I try to keep out of it. Any puff pieces or anything that goes all the way up in either direction. You know, the greatest mistake a man who is a leader can make is to be the victim of either self-adulation or self-pity. And when he reads the favorable press releases at the time, which I didn't do, or the covers, then he begins to intelligent self-adulation, and he's on the rise of a fall. And on the other hand, when he reads the excessively critical stuff from people who really are trying to get under his skin, not really to report, but they're really trying to needle, they don't agree with then he indulges in self-pity. Either results in a man not being able to do the job effectively. An individual, I put it another way, the moment that the individual who is in this office allows the issues to become personal, allows himself to become the issue, or thinks in personal terms, then he cannot go through the great crises. He will not make the great decisions well. I have a rule that I must reduce the personal quotient to an absolute minimum. I try to be totally detached insofar as any personal reaction. And that means to friends or foes. Friends will come in, trying to pander and praise and this and that and the other thing. Foes, there are not many of those in the press or otherwise, because all people run from trouble. Foes, of course, are going whamming and whamming and whamming. You've got to pay no attention. You've got to, in other words, that doesn't mean from a personal standpoint, you pay attention in terms of the substance. In other words, the substance is important because these are intelligent people commenting upon great issues. So that is why I use the news summary. Rather than taking the hot news off of the tube or off of the ticker, I look at, I read this in a detached way. So that I can, and not in a personal way, and I never take it personally. I have no personal animosities. That's a very good point to make. All right, now, let's leave all that. What I think, in other words, in addition to all the substantive stuff you've got right here, I think you've got to point out that it was remarkable ever to come back in 1968.
Right.
The man most unlikely to succeed, you could say, in 1964, was Richard Nixon. Or the man most unlikely to succeed after 62, you could say, was Richard Nixon. Most people like to start there. You might start after 64, but any time you like. But then, how do you do it? And he did it without funds, except what he saw, without support, and so forth and so on. And then went on and put together the victory in 68. Then, and throughout our 4 years, virtually all of our friends and supporters were telling us that we were doing everything wrong. There was hardly any time that people thought that we were doing, I mean, not that they didn't support what we were doing, from a political standpoint. They said, oh, you've blown it this time, or, everything from Dr. Knowles to Cambodia, or what have you. And the 1970 campaign is a case in point. But that somehow, in all this period, you can't win 49 states and the biggest portion of the two-party voting history without doing something right. Now, what was done right? Well, now here's where you come to another point. The general tendency of much of the press to say, oh, Nixon didn't win it, McGovern lost it. It wasn't McGovern the man who lost, it was McGovern's ideas he lost. That point must be made. You made it before, because sure, the man blew a few, but basically, when you came right down to it, if there was ever a campaign in which the country decided whether they were for or against busing, for or against the permissiveness on drugs and crime, etc., for or against bug out, those are the issues. Those are the issues. In other words, there was a social issue. It wasn't, and you can't say it was these racist Southerners, because it was a national victory. I mean, you win the big industrial states except for Massachusetts, you win them all. The national character of the victory. In other words, the whole 50-state strategy that we followed throughout, the Southern strategy were, but what was the Southern strategy? It wasn't a racist strategy, basically. Was a strategy simply of treating the South as part of the country. And and that, of course, was shoring, and the big plays on China and Russia, the big play on the economy, they would have come back and be in line without the August 15th, but nevertheless,
here's what I was thinking of doing.
But that's about all I have. You tell me what your challenge is.
Okay, just what you said. It starts in with, first you got a year of triumph for us in 1968, which is really a year of tragedy for the country. And you go back to the year of triumph, and you go back to 62 and carry on to 68.
Sure.
The tragedy, you take what happened at the Tet Offensive, McCarthy, Kennedy in, Johnson stepping out, the assassination of King, and the riots in Washington, the assassination of Kennedy, and then we just, and so you contrast your triumph with the tragedy. Then at the end of that, you say, but at the same time, you say, even though you won, you've got 42% of the vote you win with, you've got this small, narrow margin, you've got 30 million votes, whatever it was, and then you say, here's what all the other, his opposition, is going back to history, they control the media, they control the universities.
Right.
They control the foundations, they control the Congress. Earl Warren on the Supreme Court, they control that. He tried to resign early so you couldn't appoint a successor. And you say, you've got you here, you've got all these assets still controlled. You don't use liberal strategy for the philosophy of
I would say,
the politicians.
I wonder if it isn't, why don't you use liberal strategy?
Well, we can get it.
I don't think you should use Eastern strategy.
Right.
But go back to the Horner piece that I use the word I think. I would say basically it's the Washington establishment. I would call it that way. It's the Washington, but it is a liberal establishment. I don't know any other goddamn word you can recall.
Okay, well, there'd be no mistake what we're talking about.
Okay.
Alright, so then you say,
call it the Washington.
What we've got then is we've got it's set up for the fact that there's a collision. I mean, there's a collision, it's inevitable, a confrontation is inevitable. And you say it's not long in coming. And the way I see when it really came, when we really won the mandate, was in November 3rd, 1968. That's when they all started, we had the summer. We had that summer, though, which was really excellent for us. First, you had the guys landed on the moon. You were there, then you had the Guam Dock, then you were in Vietnam, then you were in Romania. And then you came back all within a month and delivered that speech, welfare speech, which had
everybody thought.
Then you rolled off to California. And 1 month later, you came back and the storm clouds were brewing, the whole left is gathering, the demonstrators. The media is out, the left wing up on the hill is raising hell, and then the news magazines, Nixon's in trouble, both of them, Broder writes columns, and they're trying to break the president, and then we say, with this setting, you know, that then the speech comes, and it's a speech not of conciliation, compromise, but of confrontation, and that, when you go to 68%, it reveals, and this is a shorter chapter, about 1,000 words,
yeah.
It reveals then that the left, in fact, although it has all these assets, all this formidable array, out of touch with the common man.
That's right.
68%
of the silent majority.
Silent majority.
Sure, use that term.
Stick that right in. Then we move from there to the media. And I'll have a little vignette opening it up.
And so do point out that on all the important speeches in the world,
right.
I mean, let's have no illusions about it. I mean, I'm just reading, trying to read something on the Dan Michael, and Christ, I find it. That Dan Roosevelt, I mean, God
the media.
You want to talk with the media?
Just take the whole establishment media, the power they got.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to introduce it with, and the chapter title will be November 13th, The Beef Rob Des Moines, and he launches an attack on it. And then just after you set that thing.
It's an attack.
That's about four or five paragraphs. But then go into the whole, the media that control the dominance of the Washington Post, all these the networks and what they control, and really make our case against them.
Right.
That goes, that'll be, I'm sure that some of the media will pick that up.
Right. That'll make the book sell.
Oh, yeah.
That's the point.
Here's the thing, the book is a giveaway. The 30,000 is not for sale. But now here's the thing, that'll be, if you write these things at about 1,500 to 1,000 word chapters, then they get picked up as, you know, Outlook section or op-ed.
I know.
My fourth thing is, either black.
No, I'm sorry.
It's either black versus white or the Supreme Court. There's one chapter on the Supreme Court.
Right.
It could be about 1,000 words. Your whole philosophy, why you want to do it, and which, the decision.
By God, we changed it.
We changed that, right. The next is the court. That's
water, right through, throw the tooth and nail.
The next one is the black with white, and we'll roll in there. We'll get all the things that have been done for the black and explain why they're so hostile. The only group where you didn't make tremendous gains.
Right, some. Right, but pointing out, the very strong personal feeling I have on it, personal commitment. As anybody who's, that knows it, that I work on it here, I work on it personally, I do everything that I can. Those blacks that work closely with Nixon, they're all for him. They're enthusiastic. Ask anybody. But the point is here again, it is just, it's the fashion that you don't increase Helen's busing. Basically, the black liberal establishment on busing and welfare.
Well, they, again, the Supreme Court thing, they just, there's a lot of things that just almost never, a lot of it's not our fault, right? Because that's Goldwater. And they just have the Republican Party in Goldwater. So then you got that, then you got,
But you want to remember that even in the Eisenhower period, we only got 30% of the blacks.
No.
The blacks, the Eisenhower period, Eisenhower is fighting, got only about 25-30% of the blacks. I ran the same.
Was it only
20%?
I thought it was 33.
22% of the Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, of the Catholics.
I didn't get the answers of
those. No, the reason I got subdued against the Kennedy was because of the Martin Luther King telephone call at that fall.
Right. Then we got two, and I wouldn't go into these too much, but go into the one of them is foreign policy, of course, which we'll have a lot of pictures. We have to take some pictures from Ali and China. But do foreign policy, the whole sort of a philosophy behind the next doctrine, and China, and why the movement toward China, et cetera, and still entertain, you know, we got problems in the future, but you have peace, you know, and then the successes go into that, but, and then go into the Vietnam thing, which was more chronological, how, you know, in fact, I think in terms of success, anybody said 4 years ago, you know, that we had to set this chapter
35. When is your deadline?
January 15th, I'm going to have to just be cranking night and day here.
Let me tell you that don't, your Vietnam thing, don't write that until the last.
Okay.
Developments are moving. As you might imagine, that you know anything about, none of us know anything about, but we'll see. But we're not doing what we're doing, just for the fun of all.
Okay. Then the next one, the next chapter would be?
That would be something good to develop there.
Then there would be a thing on the New American Majority. You get into the whole book, how it was put together, what it consists of, that's where you get into your government stuff, how your position is taken on the issues, and you get the May 8th thing, and these others. Put that all, just you can weave that in there,
which
is
right
in the New American Majority.
Yeah, and also that the, you understand the New American Majority, too. The very, there's no accident that after I had this, that I always kept the door open to labor, because even after the very, tough confrontation with Georgia Meade in Miami. They always said that. And that we had something in common. First, in the main bond, a strong streak of patriotism. The strongest supporters, the most vocal supporters, the ones that didn't have to be asked to support were labor leaders. Whenever we had these great crises, the business leaders were generally silent. And the media, of course, were generally hostile. There was that in common. Another thing in common was, frankly, the work ethic. I believe the word ethic and
then we get to a final chapter, just we can just do a lot of things, you know, what's going to, you know, sort of future and what the problems are, if that's sort of just freewheeling then, you know.
Well, freewheeling, you know, we've got all the things, the government reorganization.
Right, you got the bureaucracy stuff.
Trying to get the bureaucracy down, trying to keep the spending down, trying to keep taxes down, getting more responsibility to people. In other words, there is a philosophical trade here, but it's also surrounded with difficulties in getting credits put together due to the compression problem. But we'll bring in quite a bit of progress on it. But that's one of the reasons that winning by so much helps.
Okay, so I think there's an awful lot of things I know we want to, we haven't been able to get out, just get them down there.
Yeah.
Black and white.
I'm gonna
run anywhere, I'm sure, from 11 to 15. And I'm just gonna, well, make sure to get all these arguments and things in there, get them all contained. And
sure.
And there'll be no problem. Great thing to accomplish.